Contenders, ready. Gladiator, ready. I've had a peas pudding sandwich and polished off the last of my birthday port, which can only mean one thing. It's time to record a podcast. My name's Andrew Gregory.
My name's Ben Everard.
My name is Graham Morrison.
Und ich heiße Michael Saunders.
Beautiful.
And with that sadly nostalgic pre-Brexit-esque intro, we are here to desultorily lay before you the prone form of Linux Voice, the podcast, Series 5, Episode 5. We have news about lots of stuff. We have some finds. We have a voice of the masses, and we may or may not have some neurons which Mike will vocalise. Sorry, Mike, I didn't mean to pause so dramatically then. Mike gave a quizzical look.
It adds tension to the podcast.
It was you. I was reacting to you. It was good. So if you like the sound of this, but done in potentially a more professional form, you can read our written words, at in Linux Magazine. I'm holding it in front of the camera now. I know this doesn't translate well on the podcast, but there it is.
Nice cover.
So, thanks. It's linux-magazine.com. And if you subscribe to that and read what we have to say and then write letters to the editor telling him that we're great and the only reason you buy it is because of the Linux Voice section and he should pay us all more money, that would be spiffing. So here we all are then. Apologies for not turning up last time. I'd left my headphones in the office, and yeah. So, news.
News. First up in news this fortnight, I've never heard of a peas pudding. That's not really news, but it's the first time I got to speak and I wanted to say it.
It's peas pudding. P-E-A-S-E. Not a peas pudding. It's a sort of... You dip it in things. It's made of chickpeas and stuff. I want to say halloumi, but it's not.
Hummus?
It's hummus for northerners.
I thought that was mushy peas.
All right, then. It's mushy peas for northerners, if you want to be like that. Yes, it's from a chap who sells peas pudding on Newcastle Quayside Market, and he's a friend of Stacey Black, who used to work for Linux Voice. So as I bumped into him at the Bishop Auckland Food Fair, I thought I would buy some of his wares, and tasty they are. It has my glowing recommendation.
Right. On with the news.
Good news section, Ben. Right, yes. Let's get on to the finds.
Yeah, that's all the news we've got. Nothing else has happened this fortnight. First up in the news section, sort of glowering over the Linux landscape this fortnight, is the news that Canonical has refocused their Linuxy efforts away from phones and tablets and whatnot onto cloud and Internet of Things devices. As a result of this, they're no longer supporting Unity after the next release, and they'll be switching to GNOME as their main desktop. This fairly dramatic news, really. It's hard to know where to start with it, really, because there's a lot of bits to it. But I guess the main chunk is that it's... Actually, I don't know what the main chunk is. It's the bigger news that they're moving away from Unity.
And the phone, I guess, as well, because it's like...
Yeah, and the phone.
I don't know how many years exactly it's been. Has it been 6 years that they've been developing Mir and Unity? With the convergence was the big thing for Mark Shuttleworth back in the day.
Yeah, convergence being the idea that you could have one OS and it would change form factors depending on what screen you were looking at it on.
Would it disrupt the industry?
Yes.
Sorry. Ah, yeah.
Yeah. So you'd have your Ubuntu on your phone, your Ubuntu on your tablet, and Ubuntu on your laptop, and they'd all be the same Ubuntu, but they'd look different because you had different form factors. This is the abandonment of that dream.
Do we know if Mir then has been abandoned? Because everybody's talking about the end of Unity. You know, Ubuntu's going to go back to GNOME. That's clear, but I'm not sure about Mir, their display protocol server X Windows system replacement. Do we know anything about that?
The only news I saw on that was, I think it was something Mark Shuttleworth posted that had been reposted a few times, saying that they were going to continue support for it in embedded devices, but not as a sort of desktop level thing. But that could be hearsay.
Because I know that, like, Canonical got a lot of flack for developing Mir, you know, seen as fragmenting the display systems market, if you could call it that, when Wayland existed. But back in the day when Canonical started Mir, Wayland had relatively few developers. You know, it was arguably a sensible decision to make to try and create a success as the X Windows system. Okay, maybe they should have done it better. But like Graham and I, in I think it was 2014, we went to Frankfurt and we interviewed the lead developer. I forget his name now.
Thomas Voss.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, Thomas Voss, and talked to him. You know, and he had plenty of arguments for why they were creating Mir, what they were doing. You know, Unity will probably go on in one way or the other. I've seen already that there's a fork with the terrible name of Unit beginning with Y. Yeah. So yeah. Some people have already suggested, well, could they have kept the name Unity? Could Canonical have sort of handed it over and said, well, we're not supporting this, but community can continue? Somebody, I saw a good suggestion on Reddit for the name of the fork, Mutiny. So at least that's... keeping some of the spirit of the name alive, but yeah, it's a big news.
They're like the shattered visage of Ozymandias lying in the sand. Graham sits tortured in silence. He can't say anything because he is an employee of Canonical and therefore would not wish anything to be misconstrued or mistaken as being from the mouthpiece of Sauron himself. So he's being quiet. Be quiet, Graham.
Thanks.
Silence.
Andrew. Thank you.
Mike, just add to your thing about Mir. I mean, perhaps the best reason to say that Mir was a good idea is the fact that Wayland is still not in. It still feels like it's exactly as far away as it was when Mir was first released. Yes, you can use it if you enable a few developer options here and there, but
I mean, the question, I suppose, a rhetorical question is, would Wayland be here sooner had Canonical found a way of working with the Wayland developers at the time?
One awesome thing I can say is that when the facts change, clever people change their minds, and
yeah,
it looks as though Unity wasn't working, and so it would just be flogging a dead horse to keep at it, really. I mean,
yeah,
people don't want convergence. You're happy with a phone that looks different to your telly, that looks different to your computer, so why bother pushing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing that really changed is people did get just got used to multiple different operating systems in a way that was kind of unusual, at least 10 years ago.
I reckon if Macs had been cheaper, then iOS and the iPhone could have taken over and converged, or if there was a usable desktop Android distribution with some industry backing behind it, we could have had an Android, you know, x86 Android taking over on the desktop. But now, you know, like you say, people have got used to it.
Yeah, didn't you know, my mum can handle using one OS on her phone and one OS on her computer. It's what we do.
I was quite surprised at the backlash or the how big this story has become. I wasn't aware or didn't have, maybe as a KDE user, maybe that's the truth of it, actually. I wasn't so emotionally invested in in its success or how or its failure or but that has really caught me off guard how huge this story was. Initially, there was the Hacker News. Dustin Kirkland posted a question on Hacker News for feedback to roll into the next Ubuntu release, and this mere Unity issue came up top of the list of bugbears that people had. And then, you know, Canonical seems to have responded very quickly, and then people have responded again to the idea that I think a lot of people seem to actually have liked Unity and not been very vocal about it before, which is really surprising.
I like Unity.
Yeah, you have always
been using
said it.
For a long time.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm really going to miss it. And I haven't used GNOME in quite a long time. I may have forgotten what it's like. It may have improved since I last used it.
Now that there's going to be, now that there is a Unity fork called this Unit, then there will be a version of Ubuntu soon. With a flavour, a respin, with this desktop. So what will it be called?
Yeah, will it be officially supported?
Will it be officially supported? Exactly, yeah. So you've got Lubuntu, Zubuntu, Ubuntu Mate. What will be the name of the forthcoming Ubuntu distribution with Unity? Unibuntu.
So Unit is a fork of Unity 8, which still isn't stable. So I'm not convinced it's really going to end up going anywhere. I mean, maybe it will. We'll see. But it's going to be a tall order for the community to pick that up and turn it into a good desktop.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, the internet's full of debates and discussions and arguments and flame wars about this. And I think it's one of those great internet things. Anybody can have an opinion on desktop environments. You know, everybody's got their own personalized workflow and, you know, people don't argue so much about new features in GCC or the kernel because they're usually very technical and only affect a handful of people. Well, we all feel at home in our desktop environments and you know, can strike out against others.
Yeah. How do you feel about, I mean, the death of the phone has all kind of rolled into this as well. The Ubuntu phone is the, I mean, this was almost like one of the motivating factors for Unity and Mir anyway. I think that's the Ubuntu phone for everything that I said about it was perhaps the freest most open source phone you could get your hands on.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the idea of the phone. It looked good when I had the chance to poke one, but it just took too long to get into a stable position. It was too hard to get hold of. It was too much of a geek plaything that needed a bigger market and didn't get there in time.
Yeah, I think it should have had Android compatibility, but
yes, it had its own little walled garden of applications, didn't it?
Yeah,
You couldn't. Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, and for the when I did use it, sort of the whole Scopes thing, it needed really good media integration. If it had had, you know, sort of really good sort of Spotify like stuff from the day or from early on and that sort of thing, everything coming into it, and if that all worked, it could have been a really great device, but it seemed like that was just a bridge too far at the end. I think of all the things, I think the phone dying is probably the least surprising. It was obviously a money hole. Shall we move somberly on to the next item of news? Really, we can leave to say on that is we wish everyone at Canonical the best of luck for the future, and we hope that it does work out okay. And So, next up on our news list this fortnight is that Nginx has reached a third of the web server market and Apache falls below 50%.
Whoa!
This is obviously wildly subjective depending on whose statistics you believe, but this is based on the W3 Tech's statistics. It's hard to get accurate things, because what's a website, what's a separate website, where do you draw the line? Is a static page the same as a fully interactive BBC thing or something like that? But anyway, bunch of numbers get plucked out of the air, and okay, these a third and 50% things are entirely arbitrary really, but Nginx is getting close to Apache and it's growing while Apache's falling is the sort of headline news here.
I've seen the reason why I suppose I'm a bit uncomfortable with Nginx. I'm not uncomfortable with it. I think we've all seen the rise of it because it's simpler to maintain and it's easier to put into a container, and I think that's how a lot of people seem to be using it. I think it's surprising that Apache hasn't perhaps responded to it. I see Nginx, maybe I'm wrong, Ben, but it seems like it's a bit like the NoSQL movement in terms of web browsing.
I think there's an element of that, but I think there's also an element of them sort of targeting different markets. Apache's a much more capable web browser, web server. You can do just phenomenal amounts of stuff with it, but as always happens in such cases, you generally don't need all that stuff.
Yeah.
If what you need is something to serve web pages, Nginx is a much better option. It's simpler, it tends to be more secure purely because there's less stuff going on there. It's faster, it's less memory intensive. It comes down to the fact that you can serve more pages off slower hardware.
Yeah.
And there is probably another story here in that Nginx is often sort of a front, serving static pages and passing more complex requests back to Apache sitting, somewhere else in the data center.
Yeah, it's like you say, Ben, the how these statistics are gathered and reported is interesting. I remember back in the day, maybe late 1990s, early 2000s, when Microsoft was really trying to get into the web server market with IIS. Was it? Maybe it still exists now. I can't remember what it stands for. But Microsoft was claiming at the time huge success, beating Apache, beating Unix and Linux. And IIS was being used, but to serve basically domain parking pages. So still 99% of the web of doing all the hard work was Apache on Linux, FreeBSD, some of the Unix variants. But Microsoft was like, oh no, look, we're doing loads as well. But, it was just sending out 50 bytes of HTML.
Yeah, this is one of those things that kind of, it's great in the way that technology moves on that, but I also feel a little bit sad because Apache was one of the first huge open source projects. When I say huge, like really made an impact on the way computing works. Perhaps more so than Linux, maybe not, but in the sort of late 90s where the .com boom and all that, in many ways it was powered by Apache. It allowed affordable web pages to exist. Without that, you needed hugely expensive licenses for whatnot. And this thing came up and it's like, you can serve a web page and enter the cybersphere, as it was once called, using free software. And it was the bastion. It was the thing that made people believe that open source wasn't just a bunch of hippies tapping away at a computer. It was a real tangible thing that
could make
huge things work.
And people use it because it was good. People use it because it was actually the best thing around. We advocate lots of stuff that we believe in, and we support Linux and LibreOffice and GIMP, but we know they have their limitations and they might not be the best for every scenario. But yeah, Apache was out there because it was just by far the best thing for doing its job.
Yeah. And it's nice to see Nginx. And Nginx is obviously open source as well and all that thing, but it just... Today. Makes me feel a little bit sad to see Apache fall, even if it's perhaps the best thing for the web.
Although I had to change my virtual host configuration just the other day because of some mess up, and every time you have to do that, you're reminded about how complicated Apache is.
Yeah, that is true. I've been configuring both Apache and Nginx quite a bit recently, and they are different, but yeah, Nginx is definitely a nicer format.
Is it like the nano of web servers?
Emacs users will probably tell you it's the VI of web servers. Um, Okay, shall we move swiftly on to our final news story this fortnight? And that is that the NSA's hacking tools have been dumped onto GitHub, which I guess makes them open source now.
Yeah, hello.
And this, a little while ago, a load of hackers stole a load of stuff from the NSA and dumped them all on, actually, mega.com. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things was an encrypted file. And at the time, no one knew if it was really an encrypted file, just a load of random data or whatever and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, I remember.
And then, last week, last week there was this big tirade on Medium about how Donald Trump, of all the things to have a tirade about Donald Trump, this particular person chose to have a tirade
that wasn't
Donald Trump enough. He said he was letting down the people who wanted to make America great again by not being sufficiently, I think, racist.
Great.
Not, sure.
Not being great enough.
Yeah, by not being great enough. Anyway, it ended with this, with the encryption key to this file, and it turned out to contain all sorts of hacking tools that the NSA created to poke in and about and up and down inside of the people's servers. So at the moment, we still don't really know where they came from. If someone managed to hack into the NSA, if, I don't know, someone left a flash drive on a plane seat, or anything else.
How many of them target Linux and open source as opposed to terrible proprietary bug-ridden software?
I haven't done the maths, but a lot of them are certainly targeting open source stuff, probably because that's who the NSA wants to target. That's where the valuable data is. Most of these aren't sort of poking about in desktops. They're for going into servers and sucking up huge chunks of data.
Yeah. It's probably loads of hackers moving back to Windows XP now.
Yes.
Or Vista. Now,
yeah, or Workbench, come on.
Yeah, we have to squeeze some Amiga reference into this podcast. It's been 23 minutes and we haven't talked about the Amiga yet. So how's your Amiga doing, Graham?
Oh, it's. I've had some requests to do an Amiga podcast, you know. Seriously.
We should do it. We really should. With Patreon as well.
Maybe we should do it as a one-off, yeah. But yeah, if we launch a Patreon channel, we'll punish people with an extra Amiga podcast.
Listeners, if you want an Amiga podcast and you'll pay us to do it, leave a comment, please.
I've literally never used an Amiga. I don't know if I've used
Ben.
You have to come around to play at my house, Ben.
What were you doing in the 1990s?
I was playing on the Commodore
64.
Yeah.
Okay, that's acceptable. It's a precursor.
Isn't it like live streaming the first time you use something? Isn't that what like the cool kids do these days?
I don't get that. Unboxing, what the...
Unboxing video. Andrew, you've never watched a 25-minute unboxing video of like some random pair of earbuds or something. That's what all the cool kids are doing now.
Complete indifference to most things that other people do. So you can live
vicariously through other people's experience. You don't need to then go out and buy these expensive headphones. You just
I don't want to vicariously buy headphones. I want to vicariously be a gladiator or something cool like that.
Shall I buy an Amiga off eBay and video the unboxing of my second-hand 20-year-old Amiga?
I would watch it, actually, because it's you.
I'm not going to bore you with what I went to it was my mum's birthday a couple of weeks ago, so I went back to my family home, and I came back with a box of floppy disks and a Quickshot Pro 2.
Kickstart.
And
a what?
Quickshot. Do you remember the joysticks with the ergonomic Competition Pro and a... and a Supra modem. Do you remember those modems? I was hoping that there'd be some bulletin boards I could kind of dial into and join FidoNet, but I haven't been able to find any numbers. And to at least use the BT connection that I pay them some extortionate rental fee for. But actually, I've not had that much time to play with it since then.
Right, we've got room for old stuff in the finds of the Fortnite, because I found some old stuff. It sounds like we're drifting in that direction already, actually.
Should we go switch straight to finds of the Fortnite?
Yes.
Hang on. If there's no dial-in BBSs, could we start with?
I'd love to. I was really thinking this because I don't use my phone line for anything else. I might look into it. I might look into setting up my Amiga on FidoNet as a create some kind of security encryption bulletin board system.
Surely all the encryption you need is a modem.
That's a security by obscurity doesn't win. Obscurity. Obsolescence. Okay, find the Fortnite. I'll go quickly through IRC because there have been a few finds. Edinab has said a few, actually. This is a couple of days ago. And Ben is a prophet, apparently. They've been listening to old series of the podcast, Series 2, Episode 15. Ben complained that if Richard Branson... Virgin can't get his internection configured in Bristol. He shouldn't be putting planes in space.
I don't know if Richard Branson lived in Bristol.
He's been here fixing my internet for 3 years.
So I don't know. There's some more prophetic finds from you, Ben. Apparently from Series 2, something to do with Google Street View. Diagon Alley is in Street View. Is that one of your finds? I don't know.
I can't remember.
Some appreciation for the oscilloscope music from a little while ago. I'm only going to do the ones that highlight my nickname in there. This was brilliant. This is the game Thimbleweed Park. Now, this is, I can't believe I'd forgotten about this, but this is from the creators of Monkey Island. Do you remember the point-and-click adventures by...
Guybrush Threepwood.
Exactly, from Ron Gilbert and Gary Winnick. Anyway, they did a crowdfunder a couple of years ago. 3 years ago, I'd completely forgotten about it, and I don't actually know when the game came out. But huge thanks to McPhail for pointing out that there's a native Linux version and the game is out. It may have been out for a year for all I know, but I can't believe I've missed it. That's great. There's another one from Danke. Something I found is the directory proc PID/FD contains all the open file handles of the process identified by the PID or the symlinks. That's a good find. This is something that maybe... This is a question, but there's no one I can... Maybe you can help, Mike. Alien is doing some assembler. In long or protected mode, are the addresses used as operand virtual addresses and offsets from the start of the program or the start of the current segment? They've been looking around the internet to find an answer and they can't find one.
Well, that is a brilliant question. Unfortunately, I only ever programmed in real mode. Well, for macOS anyway. I did some Linux assembly tutorials, but I didn't go into that depth. So I'm going to have to let you down and say, give out my geek badge and say, I don't know that one.
Well, they've got an extra find for credits, and that's HT Editor. I've not used it, but they say it features a rich disassembler and editor that supports many formats and runs on Windows and Linux. Final find from the IRC channel. Rochelle Limit says, an old one, sounds like something that you do, Mike. I'm on holiday with internet too slow to watch BBC iPlayer, so get iPlayer with TV worst quality mode, download successfully with a 70 kilobits per second connection. Get iPlayer is brilliant.
That is so Mike Saunders.
Oh, that's awesome. Speaking of iPlayer and BBC, on Friday... Well, actually, on Saturday and Sunday, I'm going to be attending the World Snooker Championships in Sheffield.
Sweet! So
if you're watching snooker on the TV and you look into the crowd and don't pay attention to the match, you may see my beaming mug there.
Do you know who you'll be watching, or is it just depend on other matches?
I think the qualifiers are still going on at the moment, so I'm not sure. But we did book the tickets 11 months ago. So, yeah, that's the only way to do it. And that's for the first weekend. So we may end up watching some pretty rubbish matches. But, you know, it's all about being there.
Okay, cool. Does anyone else want to go next?
Yes, me please.
Go for it, Andrew.
So speaking of the BBC, you may want to watch the next series of Mastermind, because there's going to be a very handsome fellow on there answering questions about the novels of George Orwell. And that's me.
Really?
Yeah.
No way, cool.
Yeah, I'd forgotten. I mean, Sally did it for me. I was like just lying drunk on the floor, and she said, "No, why don't you apply to be on Mastermind?" I said, "Yeah, as long as I don't have to lift a finger to do it, that's fine." So,
oh man, that's amazing.
Where was it recorded? Or
it's gonna be? Well, it's not been recorded yet. It's gonna be recorded in July.
Okay.
So and if I get through to the next round, it'll. I don't know if I should spoil it for you all, actually. I probably shouldn't, should I? Look out for exciting cleverness.
It must be easy doing George Orwell at the moment, though. You just have to, you know, pick up the Daily Mail.
Just read the papers. Well, exactly. I kind of know 1984 off by heart already, so that leaves me with most of the revision done. Yeah. So,
are there any qualifiers or anything like that, or do you just apply and get in?
I had a phone interview. They asked me questions about the periodic table and Taylor Swift. Obviously, as an expert in both, I sailed through that round.
Was silicone. The answer Harry Styles? That's the only thing I could say.
Yeah, the answer was silicon.
Same thing. Carbon.
Was the question, what is Taylor Swift mostly made of?
she comes out at night, mostly. Yes, other stuff. I'm now more than twice as old as the girl who refused to serve me because she didn't believe I was 18 in Morrison's. which was a bit surreal. Yeah, and also I went to the Bletchley Park and the National Museum of Computing on my birthday, which meant a lovely romantic stay in Milton Keynes. Interesting. Mixed. Bletchley Park is absolutely fantastic. The National Museum of Computing, I found non-fantastic. I know this would probably be a controversial opinion on this channel. But it's old stuff. And just because stuff is old doesn't necessarily make it significant or interesting or important. Dusty grey or beige boxes may be fantastically compelling to people who used to work on them, but as an experience for a non-expert, for someone who's interested in finding out about the history of computing, it's pretty much useless. Obviously, it's a labour of love for the people who work there. And if you are an enthusiast already, you're going to love it. The highlight for me was the restored Colossus, just because it's of its superb historical value. Rebuilt Colossus, I should say. But as an actual museum experience, it's like museums used to be before we made them accessible and interesting to people. Just old stuff.
Do they do anything with the Colossus, or does it just sit behind a glass pane?
It's working. It's whirring away, and you're warned not to touch it.
Do you know what it's doing?
It was breaking a cipher, as it would have been in ye olden days.
I was trying to remember if that was all. It wasn't programmable, was it, Colossus?
No, it wasn't.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think the first programmable one was... was it Baby in Manchester? But and I asked the fella who was operating Colossus, and he claimed never to have heard of it. But so those are my finds.
Thanks, Andrew. Cool finds.
Milton Keynes is weird, but you knew that already.
Yeah, I used to live in Milton Keynes. It explains a lot, doesn't it? I used to actually one of my fondest memories is because there's so many cycle pathways, or there used to be, was after having a good few pints, go out on these cycle pathways. And there are a couple of places in Milton Keynes where there are old medieval villages underneath the fields and the greenery surrounded by estates. And so you could cycle to this sodium-lit patch of green that no one else would know anything about, and it would actually be undulations of an old medieval village and high street and shops and yards, gardens facing off in the original directions. So it is there. It's just underneath. You just have to scratch the surface a little bit. If they haven't actually built over that bit. Does anyone else want to share a find? I have one. I have an audio-related one. I'm going to do it quickly. It's Sonic Visualizer, which is a really brilliant application for seeing what sound looks like. You know, like spectrograms and, well, amplitude waveforms that audio editors normally have. It's a really good way of kind of sampling audio and seeing what it looks like, seeing the actual... Everybody's disappeared now from Hangouts.
I'm just shifting in my chair.
It's
I was just completely sure there was still some Enigma codes that hadn't yet been cracked that people were trying to crowdsource cracking of, and I was trying to find that to drop into Andrew's story, but I can't find any reference to it online.
Now. Enigma or Lorenz codes?
Maybe it was Lorenz.
There was, wasn't there? There was, because they only... That's what you're saying. They tried to crowd source that.
So you could like download a little bit of it, and
it's the history behind it is absolutely frighteningly clever. They showed the radio operators or GCHQ or the Admiralty or whoever was the authority at the time showed a transmission to this chap. I can't remember his name. Criminal of me. And then he went away and came back and said, "Oh yeah, it uses 5 rotors and 3 rotors step alternately, and 2 of them step at random, and this is how I think they're put together." And then eventually, when they captured one of these machines that the Germans were using, they found that he'd physically described it perfectly without ever having seen one. Just amazing, absolutely astonishing, of people who were in black and white.
Did I mention that I saw The Imitation Game like about 6 months ago? I thought it was an awful film, really terrible, a terrible disservice to
what
they were doing at Bletchley Park.
I thought it was an okay film, but it was a misrepresentation.
Yeah, and just I mean I know we've talked about this before, but something that we have a little bit of knowledge about, it's only a tiny bit of knowledge about, and everything, the whole of Hollywood just falls apart. Is it the same for anything that Hollywood touches? It's awful. Well, I mean, the whole romantic element, it was just, I don't know, I found it so painful. It was probably entertaining, but...
There was a film about the American submarine officers who captured an Enigma machine. And I found out at Bletchley Park that it wasn't actually John Bon Jovi who did that. Mind blown.
Okay, so mine found with Sonic Visualizers, brilliant audio visualizing tool for sound if you want to do it. Anybody else want to have a go?
I've got a couple of finds. Offering Ben there? I don't know what to do now.
Sorry, I was trying to find where I'd put my finds. I got lost on my desktop again.
While Ben's finding his finds, then I can step in, assume control. I have a couple of finds, one Linux-related and one that's not Linux-related. And the not Linux-related one, it came about when, after some of the recent events in Europe, I ended up reading this article about the 2004 Madrid train bombings, which is obviously not very very nice. But I saw that one of the bombers got a prison sentence of 42,922 years. So he's going to spend quite a bit of time in a Spanish prison. But it made me wonder, what was the longest ever prison sentence? And this was got this from Wikipedia. Chamoy Tipiaso was the wife of a high-ranking member of the Royal Thai Air Force and an employee of the Petroleum Authority of Thailand. She is known for receiving the world's longest prison sentence for her involvement in a pyramid scheme that defrauded more than 16,000 Thais. In 1989, Tipiaso and seven accomplices were convicted of corporate fraud. She was sentenced to a total of 141,078 years in prison. But Thai law at the time stated that the maximum sentence that could be served for fraud was 20 years. In actuality, she only served 8 years of the sentence. So it kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it? We sometimes see, like, you know, people sent to prison for rather nasty things get out extremely early and it leaves your head scratching. But 141,000 years sentence and you get out after eight.
Yeah. Did you see what was the longest time served?
That would be another good one. I'm sure there are some people who've been on death row in the States from being like, you know, 18 years old who are still there and they're in their 80s or 90s. That's something for the next podcast, I think. It'd be impressive if anybody could last 140,000 years.
Some people, unfortunate wretches who stole a loaf of bread in England in the early 1800s, their great-grandchildren are still in Australia.
Lying on beaches now, yeah.
I know.
Enjoying fantastic weather. Oh, man.
Affordable property, outside living, a good quality of life, etc.
Although you do have your surroundings, everything's trying to kill you constantly. You know, it's a giant ass desert full of nasty, creepy crawlies. So, you know.
Well, you've just reminded me with that it's it was yesterday, the 10th of April, was Leon Kowalski's inception date.
Yes, it was.
I really must lend you Blade Runner, Ben.
I have no idea what that means.
We are living in the future.
My second find, anyway, is about ReactOS, which is, of course, the open source operating system
of the future
that tries to be compatible with Windows. Well, it's compatible with some Windows software. It's a bit like Wine, but it uses some Wine libraries, but it is a complete standalone operating system. We've covered it a few times in the magazine before. You know, it's been around for 15, 20 years. But the reason it's my find is that it's position 15 on distrowatch.com. ReactOS is position 15. That means it's above Madgea or Magea, Lubuntu, Zubuntu, Slackware, FreeBSD. You know, that's quite a meteoric rise for this. It's not even a Linux distro, of course, but I've always thought at some point ReactOS could gain some sort of niche with a bit of commercial backing, you know, for people who don't want to upgrade to the newer Windows or don't want to pay the license. It may just be a random spike, and of course distrowatch.com listings are not, you know, scientific, but I've always thought it's a fascinating open source project with a lot of hard work gone into it. People trying to clone the horrendous Windows APIs and subsystems. Good on them, and maybe this is the start of something quite special for them. And those are my finds.
Okay, I've managed to find my finds again. It's one of about 50 browser tabs I've got open. So I got two finds. First one, last fortnight I was talking about using the Common Crawl archive, basically a dump of a huge proportion of the web, and you can meddle about with it. Well, this time I found it's a project that's already done a lot of the meddling about with that dump for you, and it's called the Web Data Commons, and they run basically a load of extraction procedures. They run them about once a year, and the most recent one comes from, I think, October last year. And they've got things like all the recipes they could find dumped into like a standard format. And they've got what they call Web is a DB, which allows you to sort of, it tries to look up relationships on the web. So you can search for like Darth Vader and it will find Darth Vader is a man, Darth Vader is a villain, Darth Vader is a father. And all these sort of relationships that it can find, just trying to pull out and sort of make some semblance of sense of what is on the web. Another one's table extraction, where they just try and find every HTML table and sort of understand what data is in it to at least a little extent, and you sort of allow you to sort of parse that. And this, yeah, the full data dump is almost impossible to deal with unless you're working on big servers with and cloud whatnot. But this, they get down to a few hundred gig, which is still pretty big, but it's something you can actually deal with on a home computer. And some of them are even smaller. The recipes one, I think, is only tens of gigabytes. So it's, yeah, it's, I've only just discovered it, so I haven't had a chance to play about with it too much. But yeah, I'm going to grab it and see what information I can squeeze out of it over the next few days, hopefully.
Cool. Any mushroom news?
Well, I've had a couple of harvests of mushrooms actually since I last brought them up. At the moment, they're just sort of going through a few experiments to see what sort of substrates you can grow them on. So the one that's sprouting at the moment is growing on a mixture of coffee grounds and straw, and that seems to be fruiting really well. Because most of the others have been on newspaper and straw, or just straw, and the coffee grounds got a lot more nutrients, and particularly nitrogen, which is quite important for the fruit body growth. And it seems to be fruiting really well, but it only started a couple of days ago, so we'll have to wait and see. Because sometimes you get loads of tiny mushrooms, and then they all die before becoming quite big. So, yeah, it's all going on in the mushrooms.
Okay, is that it? Oh no, Andrew's got some
courgette plant.
Ah,
there you go.
The courgette plant.
Yeah, only planted it last weekend, so it's flying, literally flying.
Awesome.
Right, are they? They're all.
Did I mention that? My mum bought me some Carolina Reaper seeds. This is the world's hottest chili pepper. So I'm going to grow the world's hottest chili pepper here in my flat. She didn't really realize what was going on. She just knows that I like spicy food. So she went on to Amazon at Christmas and typed in like spicy stuff. She gave me these seeds, and I showed her some video of people like passing out and you know, going insane from eating them. She wanted to take them back off me, but no, I'll grow them. And
she didn't realize what was going on.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got one last find from IRC. Arthur D has just crept one in. He's found pythontutor.com visualizer.html, which can run through short Python snippets line by line and draw graphs to visualize what's going on. And I think that's the end of our epic find section.
Epic finds. Graham, is my microphone still working properly?
It is, yes.
Great news. In that case, it's time to for the halfway reminder. It's halfway, it's more than halfway gone. The Champions League game is finished. There's no reason not to sit here and listen to the rest of the podcast. Still to come. Still to come. We have Vocalize Your Neurons and also our luxury voice of the masses.
Today's Vocalize Your Neurons cannot take place due to leaves on the line and a lack of neurons to vocalize. But if anybody does have neurons to vocalize, anything they want to say, anything on their minds, anything they want to talk about, any opinions they want to share, just keep it brief, lads, then Mike. Is it mike.saunders@linuxvoice.com or just mike@linuxvoice.com?
It's just Mike.
I think it's just mike@linuxvoice.com. Yeah.
Oh, wow. We're getting
it's complicated old. As you get older.
Oh, dear. Wait till you get to be 37. It's awful.
Oh, no.
Wait till you get to be 37 and you're working in an office full of 24-year-olds and none of them have ever seen Blade Runner.
And they've never used Amigas.
Never played Frontier.
Okay, no need to rub in.
Prefer The Expendables to Breaking Bad.
Oh, I just God, feel like I'm being picked on now.
I'm glad I don't work with any of those monkeys. So, it's time for the voice of the masses. Will you miss Ubuntu's Unity? We've already discussed this, so let's cut to the chase. Let's start with people who will not miss Unity.
Bob Anderson says, I never tried it personally, but I was sad to hear this because I was hopeful that it might become a fast answer to the touchscreen laptops market that seems to be totally controlled by Windows 10. Never tried it personally. GNOME 3 should work quite well in a touchscreen, probably even better than Unity, says Nebuchadnezzar. Phil says, I actually feel like I am reliving the Commodore downfall once again. Right, Ray Woods. He says, quite simply, no, I will not miss Unity. When you do a job, you use the best tool for you in the toolbox. I had grown up with the Windows 95 GUI and found no reason to deviate from this formula. When I upgraded to Linux, I found the SUSE 10.3 GNOME desktop suited me best as it mimicked the Windows 95 desktop. I later moved to Linux Mint, found their version of GNOME 2 to suit me best. There was a bit of turmoil whilst GNOME 3 came in, but now the dust has settled, I'm back with Mint and the Cinnamon desktop. It just works, and that is all I need. Thank you. Yep, I massively concur. Unity versus GNOME 3 is a moot point for me because I'm already on Cinnamon. Mo says, I was never really a fan of Unity. I used pretty much every incarnation that came with an LTS and always found it to be slow. Paul Walker, no, I won't miss Unity at all. It's the reason I switched from Ubuntu to Mint. I tried a couple of times to use Unity, but it never seemed right. I love Cinnamon. Everything feels just right. Les W agrees he will not miss it, nor will Lucifer, nor will Kevin O'Brien, who says, I use Kubuntu as my daily driver, so this won't affect me much, if at all. Lots of people. Tadeusz Cantwell, no, it just felt annoying to use. I had to at least use a consistent icon and theme pack to ease the sense of wrongness. Flip the close buttons over to the right side and auto hide the bar, so I had to look at it as little as possible. Here we go. Right, let's end this negativity. John the Nice Guy says, I'll miss Unity. I backed the Ubuntu phone because I thought they were following the right path. I used Ubuntu with the default desktop since the EEPC in 8.04 and stuck with it until today. I have dabbled with alternatives, but always came home to Ubuntu. And he ends by saying, for now, I'm trying Ubuntu GNOME. It's definitely not as polished, but that's what Canonical was always good at. So I'm going to throw this back to you three in the studio. Given what we know about Canonical, their insanely talented design team and their lust for making things really pretty and nice, how awesome do we think GNOME 3 is going to be in 12 months' time?
I think it's going to be a little bit tricky because if all the people working on Unity are still at Canonical in 12 months' time, but if they all just suddenly turn up in GNOME 3 and go, look, we're going to do all this stuff, it's not going to go down well because it has to follow the flow of GNOME 3. They can't just turn GNOME 3 into Unity.
But they can have an Ubuntu version of GNOME 3.
They could.
You know, like there's a Rosa and a Mageia version of KDE 4,
yeah,
or 5 or 7 or whatever it is run now, but it's not the stock KDE, is it? It's KDE, it's optimized, it's made better, it's won louder. If there was a GNOME 3 that was made Ubuntuified, I'd use that. I think that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I wouldn't be. They're probably going to. Yeah, well, they'll obviously put their own theme and artwork in there, but I'm not sure they're going to go that far into tweaking it heavily for Ubuntu. I'm just guessing here, but it doesn't tend to be what they do, and they're just going to end up with more stuff to support, which is, I assume, what they're trying to get away from.
But I mean, things like icon themes and all that—the design elements they've been working on will transfer across, and you know, maybe they could spend some efforts moving over those little web applets, or I mean, things like the top bar on the universal menu could even be implemented. I don't know. I imagine they're probably going to experiment and see what kind of reception they get with the GNOME team, which so far has been pretty positive, I think. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, from my perspective, I'm very biased in this because in 2010, I wrote a book about using Linux, and it was based on Ubuntu. And I made all these screenshots, and I spent several months, and it was all done on GNOME. I think it was GNOME 2.x. And then the book came out, and at the exact same time, Canonical announced they were going to create their own desktop environment called Unity. So my book was out of date pretty much 6 months after it went on sale. So that's why I'm full of hatred.
There's a lesson there for all you third-party developers. Don't bother forking your project to Linux.
Yes.
And all you prospective writers. Don't
just don't do it.
Just don't bother.
Okay, we now move to people who will miss Unity. L. Murray says, I often tell people Unity is the most productive desktop interface I've ever used. The HUD combined with keyboard shortcuts felt very natural once you took the time to learn it. It would have been really cool if the HUD doubled as a terminal. Sadly, Unity ate too much memory and was not immediately clear to me how to customize the features I liked. Trivia Dave says, oddly, yes, I will miss Unity based on how much I hated it when it was first released. I've never particularly enjoyed using Unity, but it kept out of the way enough for me not to hate it when it came pre-installed on a laptop couple of years ago. See, desktop environments that stay out of the way, great. And I never really replaced it. It's the only desktop environment I've tried that works well with a vertical panel. Top and or bottom panels seem to shrink widescreen monitors' useful space. I've just tried moving both panels to the left in Mate, and neither works as well as Unity. Anthony says, losing Unity is a real loss because it got a lot of people, including me, into Linux and convinced us it was a real world option. Seemso goes one further. He says, the end of Unity suggests that the long-held interest in a Linux operating system that has a future on consumer devices has ended. With the decline of the non-enterprise desktop, Ubuntu and other Linux desk distributions would seem to have poor prospects for daily use. And we'll come back to that. Ausinch, I will miss Unity, and so will my parents and parents-in-law. I installed Linux on their machines when Ubuntu had GNOME 2. They took to Unity without problems. De Reuter says, the part I'm dearly going to miss is that they were pushing developers to use Qt for making applications. All the good stuff that regular users want, like VLC or qBitTorrent or SpeedCrunch, is already written in Qt and has much better cross-platform compatibility. And you should probably read the rest of De Reuter's comments on linuxvoice.com/voiceofthemasters. Will you miss Ubuntu's Unity/comments? Because it, unlike many other desktop environment discussion forums, nobody is insulting anybody, and it's all about decent human opinions, which is so nice. With Ubuntu not being supported by Canonical anymore, not being developed by Canonical anymore, rather, Linux has taken a step back from the mass market desktop. Discuss.
I really don't think so. I don't think it's any indication of that at all. I think that the Linux, we were just talking about it a couple of weeks ago, about how strong the desktop feels, how developers in particular, and that's a lot of how a lot of us are using our desktops for, just love the terminal, basically tiled window managers, and the desktop environment matters very little these days. And I think the Linux desktop offers still the best proposition for that, stronger than any of the alternatives. I couldn't dream of using Windows, and you know, let alone OS X anymore. I just open up a Tmux and go.
But at the same time, is there going to be another major Linux vendor that's going to work with people like Dell and that sort of thing to bring a desktop Linux to market?
Well,
But how do we know they're not going to? I mean, they've said, okay, we're not going to do Unity anymore, but does that necessarily mean they're going to give up their deals with Dell and Co?
They've said not, no. And it's not forgetting that KDE is also, I think, you know, and of course it's down to taste, but GNOME and KDE are both very good desktops.
I'm not sort of deriding the desktops, I'm more sort of questioning, is anyone going to put enough weight behind it to work with hardware manufacturers?
Yes, it doesn't matter whether the product is good or, well, the product has to be good, of course, but I mean, the four of us know that it's not enough just to have a good product. You have to.
But I mean, think companies like System 76. Companies like System 76 and Dell, I know Canonical has helped both of those companies, but not in comparison to how Microsoft helps Dell in other ways, you know, by being a big shareholder in it. Though the companies are actually riding on the success of people wanting to use Linux as it is, rather than the fact that it's an OEM deal with a company like Canonical.
Yeah, and of course there is the argument that by potentially removing one desktop environment from this whole, I hesitate to say mess, but you know, a bit more standardization. I'm no big fan of GNOME 3, to be honest. I'm an XFCE guy, but the fewer desktop environments we have within reason, a bit of competition is good. But that may actually help in terms of Linux on the desktop. And everybody's running around with different desktop environments, then you have a very fragmented experience amongst, you know, new users. But yeah, maybe if more and more, you know, Red Hat's using GNOME, Canonical's using GNOME, two of the biggest Linux companies, if they're getting GNOME out there on end user enterprise and consumer desktops and workstations, then maybe that's a good thing.
I mean, Red Hat use GNOME, but no one uses Red Hat on the desktop, do they?
No, but they have their enterprise workstation thing, so none of us would do it.
Do they still even make that?
I think they do, yeah.
I thought they discontinued.
Oh, okay. No, maybe you're right, I don't know.
Yeah, to me, as far as I'm aware, all the big enterprise deals for Linux were with Canonical and Unity, but I might be missing some. Yeah, I'm certainly going to miss it. I'm sad.
Graham, sad or non-sad? Graham. Graham has to be impartial.
I guess I have to be impartial, but I mean, as a KDE user, I think it's sad. Trying to be objective, I think it's sad that a project like this has ceased to exist. That a lot of people have put an awful lot of love and effort and passion into creating over a long period of time. I hope that the community fork flourishes and Unity and all that effort isn't wasted and lives on.
Mike, are you sad?
No, not at all. I mean, I agree with Graham in the sense that where any time anybody's put a lot of effort and work into something, a lot of passion and they believe in something, then yeah, that is a loss. But desktop fragmentation in Linux has always been a bit of a problem. Competition is good, breakfast cereals are good, as we always say, but really, you know, a couple of lightweight window managers and a couple of desktop environments would be all right. And the huge diffusion of effort and all this minor incompatibilities are more of a problem than a solution. So, okay, shame it's gone, Unity, but let's concentrate on making a really good Linux desktop environment for everybody.
I'd love to hear from some of the insiders about the decision-making process, about what changed. You know, this. I mean, at the start, before GNOME 3, and was it even before KDE4, or was it just after KDE4? Unity seems like it could have been a good idea, but when GNOME 3 started to take off, it was clear that it was either going to be GNOME or Unity that would take that position as the non-tinkerer's desktop environment. So the demise of one of them was assured always. So I'm kind of glad that it's not GNOME. But yeah, Unity was very nice, and it's a shame that it's gone. Well, that it's going, rather. That sigh, that exhalation, brings us to the end. Le fin du podcast. As I said right at the start, I've run out of port, so I need to go to my dealer very quickly. I don't know what everybody else is doing, but I wish you all a pleasant day, evening, morning.
I'm going to heat a tin of spaghetti on the hob.
I've got to go back downstairs, see if the mice have left me any peas pudding.
Yes, that's good.
Right, yes. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're not joking about being destitute. Once we set up Patreon, we would very much like it if you threw some coppers our way. Until then, though, thank you for listening. And we will speak to you very soon in approximately a fortnight.
We will. Bye-bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It's such a nice day.